It's a new Favecast. This is your host, Patricia Hernandez, and I am joined by my co-host, Gita Jackson. Hey, Gita.
Hi, Patricia.
So, fun fact, Gita used to work for Pace Comedy before she was at Kotaku, right?
Yeah, I was the assistant editor for Pace Comedy as well as Pace Games. So I split my time between the two sections of the site, helping out Garrett Martin, who's the editors for both the sections, helping him commission posts and edit stuff, that kind of thing.
So today's episode is going to be all about comedy, specifically about Rick and Morty, but I think we're going to end up talking about like a lot of shows that are on the air right now and how they handle similar topics. And more specifically, when I say Rick and Morty, I don't mean like the weird drama that happened around the McDonald's sauce recently that everyone's talking about. I think we will have things to say about toxic fans because it's now a part of the identity of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to do like a little critique about Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
So
we both just finished season three. Mm-hmm. So, and were you a Rick and Morty fan before the season, or did you just get into it?
Yeah, I was watching along. I fell off for this season until all of this drama, because it just reached this point where it got so big that I was like, I don't know if I want to be a part of that. And we can get into
we'll get into why.
I think it would be useful for us to just like take a step back and to work towards why Rick and Morty has become like the punching bag of the internet right now.
Yeah.
So before we dive in, how would you describe Rick and Morty to someone who has never watched it? Like, what's it about to you? Like, why do you think it's so popular?
It is a classic Adult Swim comedy show, essentially. It does all the things that people expect out of adult animation that runs on Adult Swim. It is violent. It is irreverent. It doesn't really have any limits about where it's going to go in the subject matter. And it doesn't help that it's like a little bit nerdy and like a little bit happy to poke fun at worldviews it finds a little stupid. I remember when Rick and Morty first started, this was it's a Dan Harmon show, also working with Justin Roiland, who I think Harmon worked with on some of his previous works. And this was the post-Community getting canceled. So it was the first thing Dan Harmon really did that wasn't Harmontown or a podcast or something. The first season, I think, really was something special because it had no ability to stop surprising you. It just would always sort of go there. At times crossing the line for me and for other people, but it didn't have any fear. Mm-hmm. It was Dan Harmon without the constraints of a really suffocating network, essentially. And that was really refreshing to watch, and it immediately became a smash hit on Adult Swim, and that's only grown, especially because they take like 2 to 3 years in between seasons, essentially, like a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So as we've talked about, I think previously in the show, when fandoms don't have any new content to consume, they go a little bit insane.
Mm-hmm.
They have to create stuff to consume, which is usually drama. And I think between seasons, the Rick and Morty fan base has got a little bit stir crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that combined with Rick and Morty definitely crossed over into the mainstream. It's definitely one of the flagship shows of Adult Swim at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more in everyone else's view, just how intense this fan base is and how much they love the show.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I watched Rick and Morty, but I didn't feel like I became tired of it until it went away. Like, paradoxically, when it was not on the air was when I heard about Rick and Morty the most. And it's probably exactly what you're describing. But in terms of like what the show is about, like, it's two people who can just travel to multiple universes.
Conceived,
right?
As a show. There's an original short by Roiland, and I think Harmon wrote it also, called Rick and Marty, actually, because it was sort of, the joke was it's like the mad scientist from Back to the Future and mm-hmm. Marty McFly, essentially, are the two archetypes of these characters. So, you know, a little, you know, a young kid that's getting dragged along all these adventures by this mad scientist. But here it's just like pushed to the point of absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
So they go on all these time travel, dimension hopping adventures, but they are all harrowing and incredibly sad,
mm-hmm.
which makes that irony is what makes it funny.
So then I feel like by the time it gets to season three, the show is in a really interesting place because, mm-hmm. Like, just narratively, by the end of season two, there was, like, a really big cliffhanger of Rick turning himself into the,
yeah, the intergalactic space police. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget their name.
The Intergalactic Space Wizards. I don't really remember their name either, but essentially, this tension of the show throughout all both of the seasons is that Rick Sanchez is a really bad person, mm-hmm. and he fucks up his family's lives. He fucks up his own life. He's an alcoholic. He's abusive. He's just warped his family so that they all depend on him. And he's like dissolving his daughter's marriage. There's a lot. There's a lot going on.
I hadn't even considered that everyone is codependent on Rick. Yeah,
because he's abusive. He's an abusive guy that makes them all feel worthless unless that they can help him. And they always need his help because he's always bringing problems into their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the tension, you know, it's like a dysfunctional family show. So the tension there is like, is Rick going to realize that everyone will be happier once he leaves? And at the end of last season, he did leave. Mm-hmm. And it was a really poignant, very well-written episode that I really loved. One of my favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show came back.
And they just undid it.
They undid it immediately.
I was kind of hoping that he would just be gone for most of the season, or that like we would see him in prison dealing with that, but like the show would be about like what their life is without him. But I guess the show is named Rick and Morty for the reason.
Yeah, the show's named Rick and Morty.
Yeah, they weren't about to do that, although that would have been brave.
Yeah.
But like even before I watched this latest season, I felt like there was just like this weird aura around the show, not just because we had waited so long for it to come back. Fans gave it a bad rap. Like the news of the fact that episodes are now being written by women, I feel like affected the way that people talked about the show a little bit. Literally, if you start or at least when I started typing in Rick and Morty and then you type in R, it will autocomplete ruined by women.
That's so sad.
I don't think that perception quite left as it kept airing because some of the episodes focused on the female characters, and I feel like some of the I'm not saying all of the reception, but like at least a vocal minority reacted extremely negatively to like these characters aren't interesting. Why aren't we like off with Rick more?
It's ironic to me because Beth and Summer have now become more interesting than they have ever been in a season that I think is the most wildly uneven and the least interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So like Beth, for especially, has turned from a shrewish harpy into a character with like an interior life mm-hmm. and a history.
What a concept!
It's so weird
when women help write female characters. Female characters have an interior life.
Yeah.
What a baffling concept. Now,
like, Summer gets her own edgy jokes. Like, the things she said, God, I was remembering she was really upset that this guy she, like, didn't like her, and so she's screaming while trying to find the machine in the garage
that'll
make her boobs
bigger. Yeah,
that
she becomes the fucking Attack on Titan.
Yeah. Just like a giant thing, yeah. My favorite thing is like, what is it that you like about her? A mutual love of French poetry, or a belief that carbon taxes are the only way to end climate change, or is it her big stripper titties?
Yeah,
those jokes. Like, I don't think that Summer would have gotten jokes like that before in other seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a part of an ongoing conversation in comedy writing, especially when it comes to animation. Prior to the season, there were no women in the writer's room for mm-hmm. Rick and Morty, which is totally whack. That's mm-hmm. nuts. It's really weird that they just didn't occur to them to think, huh, it's weird that we don't have any women in this room. We should maybe think about hiring a couple of women. But, the second episode of the season, which I thought was one of the best, mm-hmm. was the first episode that had a written by credit with a woman on it. And the problems with the show aren't necessarily with the writing.
Mm-hmm.
There is some tonal problems, but the biggest problem with the show is that Rick Sanchez is the lead character.
Mm-hmm. I feel like going in, what I saw as the biggest problem, I don't know if you feel the same way, but just the sense that it didn't have anything new to say.
Yeah.
Like I felt like by this point, the big story beats, we were just already familiar with them. Like you said, Rick is a toxic monster. Like we know this, right? Rick can care about people, and like maybe deep down he's like a vaguely decent guy, but you can't fix him. He's like beyond fixing. We knew that. Jerry is an idiot. Another story beat that just all the time. I did feel like Morty got a little bit savvier this season. Like he was more in tune with like Rick's bullshit, like more than any of the other characters. And like you said, Summer and Beth both got more agency. So I'm not saying that it was like completely static. The characters went somewhere, but like overall, I feel like the narrative arc didn't go. It says something that by the end, they wink at you and go, yes, we're basically rebooting, except more streamlined.
Yep.
And it just I feel like the central message of the show hasn't changed or evolved. Like, it's always been that anything you love can die, that like the world is vast and infinite and you are a piece of shit in it and nothing matters, basically, is like always been the point of this show.
Yeah. Part of the problem for me also is when this show premiered and in the second season as well, you did not know where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now everyone kind of understands the Rick and Morty formula. And part of that is because they haven't found anything new to say. They are still just nihilistic, like everything sucks, nothing matters, over and over and over again. But that's compounded by the fact that there is nothing it's surprising in Rick and Morty anymore. They didn't do another interdimensional cable, I think, because they did that twice. And the second interdimensional cable was not as good as the first.
Well, I feel like there's only so much shock that you can pull from, like, the fact that they just keep killing characters.
Yeah.
And they just come back. Yeah. Which I guess goes towards the central theme of, like, nothing, like, these characters can die and it doesn't matter. We'll still have the show.
You know, it reminded me last night.
There's, like, just no stakes. But
yeah. No, there aren't any stakes. And, like, it's, and there's not even any emotional stakes. There's no intellectual stakes here.
Mm-hmm.
We always know at the end of the day, nothing matters. It would be shocking now if they wrote an episode in which the lesson was actually caring about things is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, because that goes against the show's philosophy. And in some ways, Dan Harmon as a writer, just that's what he believes. He believes that nothing matters. He believes that caring about things is not that cool. And he really believes that it makes him enlightened to be depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, at least I can't speak for him or how he thinks, but his work says those things.
Right.
And it becomes frustrating to watch. I tried to compare it in my mind to a bunch of different comedies that are similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
So Peep Show is a British comedy. That's one of my favorite shows of all time. It's David Mitchell and Robert Webb. And they play the two most loathable men of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And they never get better. They, in fact, become more and more depraved as time goes on. And to the point where, God, one of the characters is getting married to a woman he's been pursuing for years and years and years, and he realizes on his wedding day that he doesn't want to do it. So he makes him and the other character hide up in the upper balcony, and the other guy is like, I really need to pee, and he's like, you're going to hold it. And he just makes this guy pee himself because he doesn't want to get married that bad. I never felt like in the show you were being told that this was the correct way to think. And I think there's a certain level of depravity in Rick and Morty, but I think the end of the day, the moral there is, and you also should believe these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a problem that if they're trying to say something different, their fan base has also really internalized the idea that nothing matters and you shouldn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Yeah, there's this quote by Rick that really struck me in the latest season where he says, when you know nothing matters, the universe is yours. And I've never met a universe that was into it. And I felt like this was just so indicative of who he is as a person. But I feel like also just, I was weirded out by this sense that Rick was kind of like implying that he was owed something. Like it painted this picture of like, if he never invented, if he just didn't have the scientific capacity, if he didn't have these godly powers, he would be on Reddit posting about, like, why the fuck don't these females, like, sleep with him because he's so smart? Can't they see that he's so smart? Like, why aren't they into it?
And that's definitely how people feel about the fan base now, too. That's definitely how people believe the fan base is. And that's not true across the board.
Yeah, like,
one of the
biggest memes, isn't it, like, you have to have an IQ of blah, blah, blah to love
this
show.
You don't have a big enough IQ to, like, watch Rick and Morty. It's such an intelligent show. There's a great article on Vice where someone went out and interviewed a philosopher, a screenwriter, like a physicist, and then was like, is Rick and Morty a smart show? And they're all like kind of like, nah, it's all right.
Yeah. And it's just, but I feel like that's the value that the show peddles, right? That it's important to be the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of see it in the way that he acts. Like, he'll just go into a reality and just steal their energy source and, like, yeah. not give a shit about,
he'll
like, how... Like, he's just entitled to it. Like, why yeah. why isn't he entitled to that super rare thing that, yeah, like...
because he could think of it and you didn't think of it, so he gets to have it. There's a really good essay going around about the startup environments and, like, tech environments. Mm-hmm. And the essay was called Why We Decided to Fire Our Rick. And mm-hmm. it went on to say, we had this programmer who was actually brilliant and did sort of twist the office so that everyone in the office depended on him for pushing products through because no one else could understand his code. But he made the workplace toxic, and he also pushed all of our products' deadlines, like, way, way, way behind. Mm-hmm. And so we realized that we had to fire him, and once we did, it became a better place to work, and we finished projects on time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the show does get at this idea that you don't want to be like Rick. Rick has nothing. He is lonely and he has no attachments. But Rick, as a character, is allowed so much room to say why that's good.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really get absorbed.
So the show is aware that he is a piece of shit. And, yeah. like, it makes a point of telling this to people. But, like... the Pickle Rick episode, I think, mm-hmm. is a great example of, like, how it falters. Just, like, it's intended to be a critique of this guy who's, like, so averse to working on his mental health that he will literally turn himself into a pickle to avoid talking about it or, like, working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, the show serves us this image of, like, Rick kicking ass yeah. as a pickle and, like, turning into this weird... rat thing, right? So, like, the effect is that people walk away with more of the idea of, like, Rick is cool than Rick is not someone who I should want to be like, or yeah. not someone that I should admire.
And even if the therapist he eventually does talk to, Constance Wong, I think mm-hmm. that's her name, Dr. Wong, Constance Wong, I'm not mm-hmm. sure. Wong was the last name. Even if she gets totally has Rick's number and is like, some people, you know, I really like therapy. I think you'd enjoy it as much as what I enjoy wiping my ass. You know, the part of why that is because it's work, and it's work with no, you know, benefit or reward. And some people are okay with going to work, and some people would rather kill themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very, like, good, like, a very apt description of the things that are wrong with Rick. He is just unable to actually do the things that make him a person. Mm-hmm. However, Rick also gets the same amount of time to lay out his worldview, and his worldview is given a lot more prominence both in that episode and every other episode.
Mm-hmm.
And his worldview is therapy is stupid, caring about things is stupid, like attachments to your family are stupid. There's no reason ever to work on your mental health because absolutely at the end of things, nothing matters at all.
Mm-hmm. That it's even better if you're depressed and unhappy because. Yeah. Then you can deal with things.
Yeah. Then you
easily.
See things clearly. Which, let me tell you, like, when you're super depressed, to
you
that point.
You always think
point,
that. You yeah. like, as a depressed person, I recognize that when I'm extremely depressed, I'm like, no, but I'm seeing things the way yeah. in which I twist things a million times yeah. and, like, think that everything is awful. I'm the only one that can actually
yeah.
see the world for
what it
is. But
then when you
is.
Get back to the healthy brain place, you're like, oh, I was just being a fucking moron. None of that was true.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, going back to this Pickle Rick thing, like, you can tell that they failed because, like, now Pickle Rick has become a meme.
Yep.
Like, have you seen this clip of this guy that's, like, just screaming Pickle Rick in the McDonald's?
Oh, my God.
Or, like,
that
just, like...
That, apparently that guy was a plant. I kept
hearing
that. Maybe,
but, like, even if it's not real, like, I see
real.
All these images of, like...
Pickle Rick t-shirts, Pickle
yeah.
Rick hats. There's a bunch of Pickle Rick merch. Like, that is the thing that people remember from the show and not
the
really good
line. Yeah.
Yeah, not the very good speech about how Rick's a broken person.
Yeah, it's like... I
or
feel
even
like
Wubble Ubba Dub Dub. That is a joke about how depressed Rick is. Wubble mm-hmm. Ubba Dub Dub in the show is like a slang term for, like, I'm broken inside or something mm-hmm. like that. And he says
and, like,
it as a catchphrase a lot.
Do acknowledge that. Like, one of the jokes that I've seen of that is, like, you put it into Google Translate and it will translate to, like, I'm a lonely person or whatever.
Yeah.
But most of the time when it gets repeated, it's outside of that context. People just say the words
yeah.
in, like, this cheery tone. Like,
it's like the same thing as saying I love lamp or something, you know?
Yeah.
Just an acknowledgement that you both like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a problem of scope and a focus problem in the show. I think it's they got a lot out of hiring new writers. I'm so happy the direction they took with Beth, especially by the end of the season. Beth is such an interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't solve the fundamental problem of they just don't have anywhere new to go.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's that Breaking Bad problem where like everyone wants to be Walter White, even though he like ruined the life of everyone around him. And gets shot and dies at the end.
Yeah.
But like, and anyone who gets in his way is just a stupid nag.
Mm-hmm.
But like, because we get to see him do all this shit with drugs, like he's a cool person and Skyler is awful. That's sort of, I feel like it's the same problem manifesting itself here. And it's so difficult to like, I don't feel like it's impossible to show you like a person who is reprehensible and like have you like dislike them.
Hi everybody, I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Rick and Morty exists in this like new wave of like deeply depressing dark comedy. Like I think of shows like BoJack Horseman, mm-hmm. You're the Worst, Better Things, The Good Place, like all these things deal with different aspects of depression, I guess, or like nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
Existential
problems.
Yes.
Of what does it mean to be good? What does it mean to be bad? Mm-hmm. Like how much does it matter that I am a good person?
Yeah, and so, like, Rick and Morty is intensely bleak in this regard, but, like, I don't feel like that's always the inherent message that all these shows have. Like, you and I have talked a lot about The Good Place.
The Good Place.
The Good Place is so good.
I love this show. I love it so much.
So for people who don't know what it is, you want to tell them what
it is? I'll set it up. Okay. So, what is it? Kristen Bell, Veronica Mars, mm-hmm. She wakes up and she's told that She's told by Ted Danson that mm-hmm. she's dead. And congratulations, she's made it to The Good Place. She plays a character named Eleanor Shellstrop. And Eleanor Shellstrop was the highest earner of, you know, the algorithm they had to determine who is a good person, who's not a good person. She won the most points. She was a huge philanthropist. And, you know, she's going to be rewarded in The Good Place with a perfect life with her soulmate. And then, you know, it's revealed that...
Spoilers.
They're so. This is a very spoiler full episode. But Eleanor Shellstrop is not the person that Kristen Bell is. Kristen Bell is a different Eleanor Shellstrop,
mm-hmm.
and Kristen Bell's character does not belong in The Good Place. Mm-hmm. She definitely belongs in The Bad Place. So she convinces her soulmate, a guy named Chidi, who was an ethicist and a professor at college. Studying and teaching ethics to teach her how to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, I think, is such an interesting like basis for a show about what does it mean to be a good person.
And also just it's inherently optimistic because here is someone who, for all intents and purposes, was irredeemable mm-hmm. during life. And they still position it as like, no, she is going to try like. It doesn't matter that she is an absolute dirtbag. She's still going to try.
Yeah. And I like, as time goes on in the show, you learn that all the rest of the people in The Good Place also have character flaws. Mm-hmm. And it really starts to turn your thinking on your head in a different way than Rick and Morty does. It begins to try to mess with your understanding of what is goodness and what is badness. Mm-hmm. So Eleanor Shellstrop really dislikes this woman, Tahani, right away. And she says, you know, Tahani's so great, like, makes a show of being so gracious and kind and welcoming, but she's doing that to show off. And then as mm-hmm. the show goes on, you realize that Eleanor's really right. Like, Tahani's very self-serving, and she may be, like, a very kind person, but she does it so that other people be impressed by her. Mm-hmm. And it tries to subvert that thinking of there's only one way to be good, there's only one way to be bad, and that bad people are irredeemable, but in ways that don't indulge in the kind of nihilistic worldview that Rick and Morty has. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good sort of
contrast.
That's, you could see me, I was holding my hands apart like trying to understand what the word was. It's a good contrast to Rick and Morty because the same themes are all there. The worldview of The Good Place ultimately is also that nothing really matters. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we could especially dive into why if you're super caught up on it, but I don't want to like spoil the, if you haven't watched it, you should really watch.
First season's on Netflix. I watched it in a day. It's so good. Mm-hmm. Please watch The Good Place and email us at favecast@kotaku.com.
Favethis@kotaku.com
mm-hmm. to tell us about The Good Place, please. But even in the beginning, you can kind of see that like, if a person can end up in The Good Place by accident, then what does that mean about being good and bad? Mm-hmm. And then that's very easily lends itself into conversations about what is good, what is bad, how much does good and bad matter?
So in another show that I think about in terms of like is intensely bleak and is about a person that is not good, BoJack Horseman.
Yep.
But BoJack is interesting because it's always clear that BoJack is not a good person and you don't want to be BoJack. And the show is effective. You can tell that the show is effective because people often don't go around just repeating BoJack's lines. Like, that would be extremely depressing. And I think the most quoted character is probably Mr. Peanut Butter. And yep. he's the only character I feel like in that show that is legitimately aspirational. And it's funny to me because he seems like one of those characters that's only happy because he's like, quote unquote, dim-witted and like, but I feel like I would still rather be Mr. Peanut Butter than BoJack. Like, it's not a ignorance is bliss thing. It's a, like, I don't want to be a toxic wasteland to everyone yeah. around me. And maybe it's not beneath me to think that life is cool and worth living.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe BoJack, I think, as a show, is trying to tell us that it's not everything in the world to be the smartest guy in the room. Mm-hmm. And that if you're the smartest guy like in the room, but you don't have any attachments.
Yeah. There's a problem if you're the smartest person in the room. Like, yeah. I never want to be the most smartest yeah. person in the room.
I feel so. I like to be recognized for the things that I do know about. But mm-hmm. I also try to recognize that there's a lot you can learn from other people. And if you are at the place where you don't believe there's anything you can learn from anyone else, that's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is what makes characters and people like Rick so toxic, is that they just fundamentally don't have any respect for anybody
else. Yeah, they just don't see value in other human beings. Like, yeah. everyone.
Yeah.
And I guess, sure, maybe that's true in the case of Jerry, but, like, I feel like most people aren't Jerry.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's another thing, is, like, our only example of, like, a male role, like, father figure in that family is Jerry, and Jerry demonstrably fucking sucks, is a coward, and is an asshole, and an idiot, you know? Like, there's nothing to like about Jerry. That's the only other example we get of a normal, non-Rick Sanchez person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only person in the show that's not related to Rick.
Although,
that's a principal character.
You have to take into consideration that we see Jerry as filtered through Rick. Like, I don't know what kind of person Jerry yeah. would be if Rick weren't there to, like, make everything awful.
Yeah, that's true. It's, I mean, and also Jerry has over time become more and more of a coward. You know, like, as the show's developed, they've made Jerry more and more pathetic.
But also he's put into these, like, ridiculous, like, I don't know, man. I guess I'm sounding like a Jerry apologist right now, but, like, I feel like he's just put in these, like, extremely outlandish situations, like, oh no, aliens have overtaken the Earth, or like, oh no, I'm dating this woman who like can kill entire cultures with her bare hand. Like,
yeah,
I can kind of understand why he's a coward.
Well, and I guess also the ways in which he's a coward are the ways in which normal people are cowards.
Right.
You know, not wanting to break up with someone because it's hard to break up with someone is a normal, normal ass problem. You know, a lot of people tell little white lies when they're ending a relationship because mm-hmm. they're the truth. It feels too hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
They usually aren't dating telepathic, you know, like alien women that could kill you with their bare hands.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So maybe if, okay, to be absolutely clear, I would put Mr. Peanut Butter way above Jerry.
Yeah.
But I don't want to completely discount Jerry. Jerry's just a normal person.
Yeah. But in the world of Rick and Morty, in order to be likable or to be valued, you have to be extraordinary
mm-hmm.
in some way. Like, Morty's problem, according to Rick, is that he's useless. And Morty's...
And yet.
Yeah.
And yet. He always has to take him.
Yeah. He always has to. I really did like the montage episode with Morty's mind blowers for all the times that...
Oh, yes. Yes.
All the times that Morty, like, kind of won... Just the example where Rick just keeps saying, take it for granted. It's like, don't you savor, like, I'm not a prescriptivist when it comes to language, but I do savor when people who are so incensed about grammar and language just say it's incredibly dumb shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. It makes me feel good.
So yeah, I think at the heart of why Rick and Morty or even a show like South Park are so ugly is that the central message is like, you're an idiot if you care about anything. Everything is awful. Nothing matters. Everything is wrong and bad in ways you can't understand. And I feel like it's just the most teenage ass Holden Caulfield, nobody gets me point to try to make.
And you know what? At the end of Catcher in the Rye, Holden understands why he's wrong.
Hmm.
The end of Catcher in the Rye is him taking a step back from his, like, toxic worldview and realizing that he is just so not over his brother's death and realizing that he needs to leave school, go to California to be with his other brother, recover from his PTSD, and be an actual person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, no one in these shows ever has that realization, or if they do, it's undone.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because of the function of television. Television has to run for a very long time.
Right.
Most television shows aren't created with having a beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
But I
can kind of understand why this happens, though. Like, Rick and Morty just feels like such a product of our time right now. Like, I feel as if the internet is just constantly telling me that I should grow a thicker skin, I shouldn't care, that caring is the worst thing you can do. And I feel like that's why it's always this shit about, like, special snowflakes getting triggered or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They care too much. That's their problem. They
yeah.
care about things in the wrong way, and they ruin everything around them because
yeah.
they dare to care about the feelings of other people.
South Park's big problem has always been its refusal to take a side. It's like the truth is somewhere in the middle. And then once you dissolve that sort of bullshit centrist point of view, what you find at the heart of it is if the truth is somewhere in the middle always,
mm-hmm.
then people who care enough to take a more straightened side, they're phonies. They,
mm-hmm.
they're bogus. You know, their opinions don't matter because it's all emotional.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion is rational and logical and scientific.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, it's, you know, often taking a stance as much as anyone else. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's also just not truthful that things are always in the middle. Sometimes things are right and sometimes things are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, it's ambiguous. But it does actually say more about you if you have some kind of ideal and you actually stick with it.
Yeah, and I feel like the problem with this mode of thinking is that when you hide things under 20 levels of irony, that's exactly how you get this problem of, like, oh, you can be a Nazi without actually meaning it. Like, if you...
yeah!
It's like...
God, you saw that guy that went to Charlottesville wearing, like, a white polo.
Oh, yeah.
And was about to get beat down by a bunch of people who were counter-protesting, and he takes his polo off, and he's like, I just came here for the lols. I'm sorry, I'm not actually a Nazi. And they're like, excuse me?
God.
You can just be a Nazi as a joke? I had no idea.
So, but I can also see why this train of thought is, like, so appealing to people, because, like, turns out caring makes you extremely vulnerable, and turns out the world is... I will give Rick and Morty this one. Yes, the world is extremely vicious.
And I will actually, you know, that existentialist idea of existence fundamentally not caring. There is no intentionality to existence. There is nothing in existence that... This table does not care that I'm sitting on it. Mm-hmm. This chair does not care that I'm sitting on it. The air doesn't care that I'm breathing it. Mm-hmm. I have to create meaning in life because life inherently has no meaning. But there's two ways of interpreting that idea. In The Good Place, they think about what we owe each other. Mm-hmm. What we owe each other in a society that inherently has no meaning is just kindness. We owe mm-hmm. each other, we have a social responsibility to be good to each other because no one else is going to do it for us. Rick and Morty says, you owe each other nothing. If existence doesn't matter, then nothing matters. You don't owe anyone shit. And if you decide that you owe people things, you're a moron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like Rick and Morty acknowledges this too. Like, the one time that Rick is happy and his life has meaning was when he was, like, with his wife, and mm-hmm. we see everything turn to shit when his wife dies. So I just feel like the show does acknowledge that caring is the hardest thing you can do, but also just, like, the most rewarding. Like, it's a gamble, and I feel like becoming an adult for me has been allowing myself to, like, care about things publicly and not care that they might seem cringy or that I might be too vulnerable or it might be, like, too much. I feel like I've just spent so much of this show, like, critiquing Rick and Morty, but I would say that I like it. It's just, it comes from a place of love that I would critique it in this way. Like,
it's because the show has been so good that I am so frustrated with this season. Mm-hmm. The first and second seasons are some of the best television I've ever seen. Like, so I remember the second season premiere where they split off into different alternate universes mm-hmm. or alternate timelines, and everything is all playing at once, so the screen actually splits up into different sections mm-hmm. and just, like, what a creative idea.
That was so I felt like high while I was watching that. I was like, so what cool. the hell.
Especially when jokes played out differently in different parts of the screen, or, like, the joke was in one of the screens, like, one of the characters behaved differently than the others. I thought that, like, how do you even fucking write that shit?
Yeah,
like, I didn't see anything in this season that was anywhere near that creative. Mm-hmm. Not at all. I'm trying to think of anything that pushed not just storytelling boundaries, but, like, creative, like, animation boundaries in that way. And I don't think this season really had an episode that did that for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like, I wonder if that is also one of the forces behind this, like, weird backlash around Rick and Morty, that it just is not as good this season. Mm-hmm. I think it can be good, like what you were describing. And I think also just there's this now I'm moving on to talking about fandom stuff, but mm-hmm. like, I think part of the reason that now Rick and Morty has become the punching bag of the internet is just it got so big, and I feel like there's always this tendency of, like, oh, this thing is hyped, we gotta burst that bubble. Like, I being contrarian on the internet is, like, super
well, there's always, like, different waves of discourse, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the initial wave of enthusiasm, and then there's the backlash. Mm-hmm. And I think pretty soon we're going to come upon the counter backlash, but right now we're fully in the backlash cycle of discourse about Rick and Morty. And the thing is, like, it's not actually that bad of a show. It just kind of had a lackluster season.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, you know, Rick and Morty fans are reminding me right now of people who really love, like, sports teams that don't do well. Mm-hmm. Like, bless his heart, Patrick Klepek really loves a bunch of really bad Chicago sports teams that don't do well. And I feel bad for him all the time, but he's very defensive of his love. Mm-hmm. Because even though they don't do well, he loves them. So he doesn't want to hear.
Pure.
It's like he doesn't want to hear people talk shit about the sports teams that he likes. Mm-hmm. That is true for, like, I love Taco Bell and I won't hear a bad word about it. It sucks. I know that it sucks. Taco Bell's disgusting. But if you've ever hotboxed a car and gone to Taco Bell, like, you know what I'm talking about right now. It's so good. But you have to, at some point, kind of look at the thing that you love and be like, you know, it's true. It's not that good. And it's fine. It's fine. It's not that good. Or else you will look like the people who got incredibly angry about McDonald's not having enough Szechuan sauce.
So I was just thinking about this. I have no doubt that the people who are out there paying thousands for this fucking sauce that you can just make at home.
It's teriyaki and ketchup, y'all.
That's all that it is. But I have no doubt that the people that got like quoted in all these articles and like freaking out and like all those videos, I have no doubt that they're in the extreme minority. Just looking at numbers, like there are millions of Rick and Morty fans. These are just like some of the most visible.
I was looking for those people to talk to, and I found like a handful, and they were actually not they didn't really exist, you know? Like, it was a handful of people that kept getting screenshotted over and over and over, and it just seemed like it...
Yeah, the internet has this effect. Like, did you... I wonder if I'm thinking about the right thing, where this publication was reprinting the Constitution in...
It was
tweets,
NPR, yeah. NPR
and then there were, like, four people who were like, what the fuck is this SJW shit or whatever? Mm-hmm. And it turned, like... This turned into a huge news story, but it was literally like five people or
and one of them apologized when it was pointed out to them that NPR does this every year on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, hey, NPR does this every year on the 4th of July. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, my bad.
So, yeah, when I talked to Rick and Morty fans, they were always extremely clear to me, like, this is not unique to this fandom. We're just so big. We've attracted like a shitty side to like all fandoms, like even Steven Universe has a shitty side to it. So Rick and Morty is not special or like out of the ordinary in this regard. It just happens to be the, like, I can't think of another cartoon that is bigger, at least for like adults right now. And I think that's part of why this is so visible to everyone. But I think also to some degree these like schisms in the fandom are like a direct result of the show missing the mark. Like, people glorify Rick because the show makes him look too cool. And so, like, the only thing people can see and what's amplified to, like, the thousandth degree is, like, Rick's godhood status.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, this weird, like, the bigger the show gets, the more it's just, like, Rick is awesome, Rick is awesome.
Yeah. No, I definitely think... That's true. Like, I think that the longer unless they fix the sort of character and focus problem they're having right now, they are going to end up with a more and more toxic fan base. And they're going to end up like South Park, just a fucking zombie, just lurching along. But everyone watches out of habit, but I don't think has said or done anything truly exciting, invigorating, or transgressive since Marilyn Manson released Antichrist Superstar. You know, like,
it's been a while.
Yeah. You know, it's like watching Marilyn Manson continue to release music is like another one of those things. He came up because I was trying to think of the last time I saw something in popular mass media that actually I felt was transgressive in that way, like actually shocking.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's so easy to try to be edgy and shocking.
Yeah.
Like, it's just always the preferred method of humor. People think saying something like, I don't know, racial slur is like edgy just because it can come out of your mouth and like it's a taboo, and like just saying it for some reason makes you like some sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, like it's just the thrill of saying a bad word when we're not supposed to is something that drives people to laugh. And I understand that, you know, it's funny to say poop. Poop's a funny word. But that's not the end all and be all of joke construction and humor and making people laugh. Yeah, it's just very difficult to actually create comedy that's transgressive, especially if it stops being a transgression and starts being part of the mainstream.
Mm.
That happened to South Park. South Park actually did used to be kind of subversive. I never really agreed with its politics, but it, at the very least, it made people so fucking angry. And that was really cool. The same for Marilyn Manson did also used to genuinely frighten large portions of America. Mm-hmm. They hated him. And, you know, both those things are just...
Yeah, I feel like now South Park just has, like, even when it does something shitty, like, the whole Kanye West thing. I can't remember exactly what it did, but like...
They made a homophobic joke and something about fish sticks, you know.
No. The more recent thing with his mom.
Oh, yeah. So Kanye West wanted to make this video game about his mom who died, Donda West. She died during plastic surgery, and he blamed himself for a long time because she would not be having plastic surgery if he wasn't an incredibly famous person. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to make a game about her ascent to heaven, and that project got shelved. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work out. Like so many video games, it just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And in the South Park game, or at least one of the trailers, showed a gay fish, which was what they called Kanye on the show, crying about his dead mom. And then a portion of the game where you play as his dead mom ascending to heaven. And it just seemed like really weird and mean-spirited.
Well, yeah, but like, okay, it's so the reception to that was some outrage and like, why would you do this? But like, it was so short-lived. Like, I feel like it was just the tiniest internet, like, it was like a controversy for like 2 hours or something. Yeah. And then people just didn't give a shit. And like,
why react to South Park is now the question. Mm-hmm. Like, when South Park does something like that, the question is, why would you ever expend energy having an opinion about this?
Like, I feel like it's made its point almost too well. If it keeps telling people, like, you were a piece of shit if you care about anything too much, like, now people are wise to the game. And, like, why should you expend any time being upset about something that South Park said? It's South Park. I feel like it's just not relevant.
If you tell me not to care about you, then I'm gonna stop caring about you. Just end of the day, that's what's gonna happen. You know, man,
I wonder if Rick and Morty is gonna cross into that, like, if eventually it's gonna be so good at its message of like nothing matters that people will stop caring about Rick and Morty.
We both had the same experience this season where we started watching it and then just kind of stopped. Mm-hmm. And I wonder like how many people list like in that are Rick and Morty fans would count themselves among fans that were excited for the third season did the same kind of thing where they just kind of stopped watching.
Yeah, I think for me it was that it got too big, and also just I'm just inundated with like so many good shows right now.
There's a lot of good television right now.
So like the combination of like everyone running around doing memes about this show with like, oh, I have a million other things that I could be watching, and many of them are like extremely good comedies, just made it easy to like not care or like watch when all of it was out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time keeping up with shows as they air, so I kind of figured I'd watch some and then wait for the season to end. But I think if we hadn't been planning on doing this podcast, I wouldn't have actually finished it. Because it's just kind of like, there's a lot of really good comedy out right now. Like, you listed like 5 good currently airing shows. Mm-hmm. And Crazy Ex-Girlfriend just came back, and that show is fucking awesome.
I still
awesome.
Need to watch that.
Oh, it's a really good show. It's so good. You're going to really like it. I hate musicals, and I really love Crazy Ex, so I highly recommend it. So it just didn't seem like I had room on my plate for it. It was the first to go, basically. And I don't feel bad about that, because now that I've actually watched it, it's just not a good season. Mm. It's just kind of boring. Really bad finale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that they were trying to do something cute with the whole, like, we're going to start over, but I was just so disappointed, especially after the last finale.
The last finale was so incredible. It was really heartfelt and emotional, and made me believe for a while that this show actually was building to some kind of point. But the only point they're building to is there is no point, which is just, I'm tired. I'm tired of that. I'm over it.
All right. Any last final thoughts on Rick and Morty?
No, but please watch The Good Place.
Wrap up. Please watch The Good Place. You heard it here first, folks.
Unfave this. We love The Good Place. Shout outs to Janet. All right, great. They're coming up with cute nicknames for us now. Aww. Favors, I like that. Okay, so we're back and we are going to answer some reader mail. We have a question from Kit. She writes, "Hi, Favors." I think that is a very cute nickname. I launched Overwatch for the first time since August and got Symmetra's new dragon skin. Congratulations. I didn't even have a particularly fun match, but the compulsion to grind for loot boxes came right back. Here's to hoping I don't get burned out on it again. Has there ever been an event that brought you back to a game in a way that made you feel like you'd want to stick around for the long term?
So I was thinking about this in the context of, you know, everyone's talking about loot boxes right now, and how I play Overwatch is definitely, I only play it when there's an event on, because then I'm like, ooh, I want that skin or whatever it is. Like, so I hadn't booted up Overwatch in like months until I saw the Symmetra skin, and then I dropped $20 to try to get the Symmetra skin, and guess what? I didn't get the Symmetra skin.
Of course not.
But yeah, I feel like that's the only time I will come back to Overwatch. Oh, you know what? What I usually come back to is Splatfests.
Yes.
In Splatoon.
I was about
to say.
What
usually gets me back. Just
if there's a really good Splatfest, I will boot up Splatoon again, because some of them are really fun. Sometimes I have really strong opinions about the questions they ask.
Yeah, and it's entirely about the community, because there is like a utilitarian reason why to do Splatfest, and it's for the shells, but that's not why I'm booting it back up. I'm booting it back up because...
You want to see the drawings.
Yeah, like I want to see the drama, like the lobby is just like lit, like it's good. Like
it makes you feel, especially Splatfest, like they make it look like a party, and then Marina and Pearl are doing that song, and it just feels really like a community vibe that you don't get from other sort of in-game events.
Mm-hmm.
I will say sometimes with mobile gacha games,
I always
end up deleting them from my phone because they take up too much room. But if they have a really good event, like I've almost re-downloaded Love Live so many times because they have really good events and I wanted to play them. But
I haven't done it. It's interesting that events are such a big part of like games as service now, but so many games are just bad at them. Like I'm constantly being told like it's double XP weekend and blah, blah, blah. Or like it's Valentine's Day and like now when you shoot things, there are little... hearts, but that's not gonna get me back into the thing. Like, I don't care. Like, it has to actually be interesting or like engaging. Like, it's not just like a small difference, I guess, with the exception of Overwatch, because they just designed the skins in such a good way that I want. Like,
they lucked out in having really good artists at Blizzard. Blizzard really knows what they're doing with that aspect of the game.
Although, to be fair, it's not usually just cosmetic for them. Like, there's a new mode right now, right?
So exactly.
People can dive into that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that also that distinguishes Splatoon's events, the Splatfest, from a lot of these other games' events, is that it's not just like double XP or you win a prize. It's like shit's going to be happening in the game that is dictated by the community. And if you're not there, you're going to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so even if you boot up the game.
There's just a sense of like missing out, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you are not going to see the cool drawings that all your friends made. You are not going
to
see...
Yeah, because now there's not even, like, a Miiverse to, like...
they're going
to
go. If you don't see them, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go into the game.
So it's just, like, this... A good event has this, like, ephemeral feeling, right?
Yeah.
Of, like, it's just during that time.
It's like going to a good concert.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get that from just double XP or you get a special new gun, you know? It has to feel like, if you don't see this, you're fucked. All right, our other question comes from Carly, and they write, "Hi, Patricia and Gita. First off, I love the show and look forward to it every week. Thank you. My question is, when is the last time a game made you cry? Or has a game ever made you cry? Game trailers or music can pull my heartstrings, but I rarely get emotional while actually playing games. Maybe I need to play some new ones."
Okay, so here's my weird confession. I think it's interesting that the marker of, like, good or like artful games is, did it make you cry? Like, I feel as if this was a question for a while, like lists of games that were capable of raising so much emotion in you that you would cry. And I don't know if that it's like me as an adult or like what, but like I cry all the time now. Crying is just a thing I do. Like, it doesn't take much to like, and I'm not saying sometimes I cry at bullshit too. I don't know. Maybe I'm the wrong person to ask this, because I feel like things always just touch me in like ways that I don't expect them to.
Yeah.
I was crying last night watching the finale of this show, and it was poignant, but like I feel like they also could have like just phoned it in and I still would have teared up.
Yeah, I feel like I cry a lot more than I used to as well. For reasons often unintended by the show or the thing I'm engaging with. itself, just like there'll be a small moment that really touches me in a particular way, and I'll just, the waterworks will just start.
But I think also just I embrace that now. Like, yeah. I'm okay with the thing with making me cry.
Yeah. No, I am also like a lot more okay with feeling emotional. I know that the last time, so we belong to a union. We're part of the Writers Guild of America East Coast. And they started sending out the screeners, by the way. Mm-hmm. I got a screener in the mail for Logan. And I was like, great, this is an excellent movie. I will literally never watch again because the last time I watched it, I cried for like half an hour. And I was just in a room of my friends, just adults. Mm-hmm. And we were having a good time watching the movie, you know, and having some drinks. Like our friends, Mike and Meg, made us some cocktails. It was nice. And then at the end of the movie, like, we all just sat in silence and cried for about 15 minutes. But it felt really good.
Yeah.
It felt good as a group to come together and have that emotional experience together. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that I was embarrassed by. And there wasn't an environment where...
That's so good. Yeah,
it was amazing. And then we got to talk about why we were upset and like how good the movie was at making us feel things. And that felt so amazing. And like that's the best part about being an adult, I think, is being able to have feelings and not be ashamed of them.
Hot tip. Cry more. You should be crying in every game that you play. And if you're not crying in every game, you should be crying at Call of Duty. You should be crying at...
Pokemon Go, crying. You see this car, crying. You see this wife, crying.
And if you're not crying, I think you should reevaluate your life choices. Yeah. That's basically my advice. Cry at everything. Yeah. Cry more.
I definitely cried a lot at Persona 5, though. I think that was the last game. Although Nier is also doing some weird shit to my brain. Nier Automata. It's making me upset.
So I definitely teared up a whole lot during Persona 5, but I also listen to the soundtrack all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, there's something about Shoji Meguro, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name, that just makes me so wistful that, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that I've listened to this song literally hundreds of hours.
The opening theme for Persona 5 has that, like, such a determinant and, like, rebellious tone that it, like, makes me have, like, determined cry. You know, like, I'm so inspired by this song that I started to tear up.
Yeah. There are different types of crying. It's not all, like... I'm crying because I'm sad. There's triumphant crying. There's, like, determined crying.
Yeah.
You should explore all the spectrum
Get out there.
And cry.
All right. I think that's where we're going to call the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to give special thanks to Mandana Mofidi, who is the executive director of audio. And a special thanks also to Levi Sharp for producing. We're going to thank Mellow Makes and Stuart Wood for doing the music that you hear in the show. Mellow does the theme song, and Stuart has done the sort of interstitial ad music. And you can send us an email if you have questions at favethis@kotaku.com or tweet at us with the hashtag favethis, I'm Gita Jackson. I'm joined by Patricia Hernandez. You can find both of our work at kotaku.com, where we write about video games and a lot of other stuff also. You can find this podcast on pretty much anywhere where you can listen to podcasts, on iTunes, on Google Play, on Spotify now, which is incredibly cool, on iHeartRadio, and Stitcher also. And make sure to leave us a review and leave us a rating. It really helps with visibility. Thank you so much if you have already done so. And make sure to check out this week's Split Screen, where Kirk and Jason will be talking about South Park, Visceral shutting down, and Jason says lots more.